You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is booting off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. Today's topic is the Hugo Award controversy of 2015. Should I say the great Hugo Award controversy of 2015 between the social justice warriors and the sad and rabid puppies? Sounds like something that you'd find on one of those really high-up cable TV channels at about 2 a.m., but it's not. It's something we're all confronting in the science fiction and fandom and professional community this year. And joining me to talk about that convoluted topic, along with other things, and on the show for the first time, though he should have been on a long time ago, and it's shameful it's taken this long, but we're going to address that today and redress it, is James Palmer. Welcome aboard, James.
Hi, Van. It's great to finally be here.
Yes, sir. James is an old friend of mine going back years and years from Dragon Con, and he's a sort of Metro Atlanta native, I believe, right, and resident.
Yes.
And I see you every year that we're both at Dragon Con. We get to hook up a little bit, but we've been friends for quite a while. Tell the folks out there the kind of stuff that you're into and where they can find it, James.
Well, as you do, I write science fiction, pulp adventure, space opera. I'm probably best known for the giant monster anthology series, Monster Earth, that I co-created and edited with Jim Beard. Mm-hmm. You can find my stuff at jamespalmerbooks.com and at mechanoidpress.com.
Awesome, yeah. I got to throw out a big thumbs up for the Monster Earth. It's such a neat idea. In fact, tell the folks kind of just the elevator pitch of what those two books are kind of about.
Well, Monster Earth and then the sequel, Betrayal on Monster Earth, is basically the Cold War fought with giant monsters instead of the threat of nuclear weapons.
I mean, right there, people should be running to Amazon to get this, right?
Exactly.
That's all you had to say. Giant monsters fighting instead of nuclear weapons in the Cold War. It's brilliant. It's a fantastic idea.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so it's kind of like Pacific Rim meets Godzilla meets like every Cold War, you know, action Red October kind of movie, like all kind of combined together is my feeling on it.
Exactly. And it has really kind of alternate history feel.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we get into the Hugo Awards, and we're going to kind of explain for folks that out there that don't know what the Hugos are or the Nebulas and what the difference is and who does them and all that, James and I'll give a little background in just a minute. But before we get into that sort of serious topic, I had promised I would give the folks out there an update of how things came out at a different set of awards. The 6th annual Pulp Factory Awards were presented last Friday night at the Windy City Pulp and Paperback Convention in Chicago. And as some of you who listen to this show regularly know, they give out 5 awards. The 5 awards they give out are Novel of the Year, Short Story of the Year, and now this year, Anthology of the Year for like a collection of short stories with a common theme or common characters, and then Best Cover Art and Best Interior Art. And I have 2 things to report that might be of interest to people who enjoy the White Rocket Podcast and listen to me. One of those things is that White Rocket Books was nominated in 4 of the 5 categories. White Rocket did not have anything out this year with interior illustrations. And that's too bad because Chris Kohler always does interior illustrations for the Sentinels books, and he did for Blackthorn as well. And I think that Chris deserves one of these, and hopefully one of these days he'll get it. But of the other four categories, White Rocket was books were nominated in all four of those categories, and White Rocket books won in all four of those categories. And so I'm delighted to report that. And for me personally, my novel, Legion 3, Kings of Oblivion, the third novel in the Shattering Trilogy, won Novel of the Year. And the Pride of the Mohicans, which is the anthology that I created and put together, but was actually written by Jim Beard, Ron Fortier, Frank Schildener, and Ian Watson, four brilliant writers, that won Anthology of the Year. And so I'm just absolutely delighted. I'm thrilled for those four guys for Anthology of the Year. I mean, that's theirs. It was my idea, but they did all the hard work, right? I just kind of herded the cats together, but they wrote the stories. I knew I couldn't write a Mohican story. There was just no way. And so I let them do it. I asked them to do it, and they did, and I'm thrilled. But the one that for me personally that is just such a welcome thing is Novel of the Year, because, you know, Legion 3 Kings of Oblivion was my 12th novel that I've professionally written and has been published. And Lucian back in 2009, the first year of the awards, just barely missed out on getting nominated. And then Legion 1 Lords of Fire was a shortlisted finalist, but didn't win. And so Kings of Oblivion winning just made my year. And so I just want to thank anybody out there that listens to the show that might have voted, because it was open to the public this year for voting. The nominees were by the members of the Pulp Factory group, but the public got to vote, and I really appreciate it. And it's an honor I will cherish always. The other winners, by the way, Ian Watson won for his story in Pride of the Mohicans, which was called Fort of Skulls, which is sort of like Native Americans meet Cthulhu. And Fabio Listrani from IDW won for Zombies versus Robots Interior Illustrations. And Mark Williams won for the cover of Legion 2 Sons of Terra, which was pretty exciting. So those are your five winners, and White Rocket did very well, and we're all very, very excited here on this end. So that's sort of your con report and awards report. Now, James, you want to dig into the much bigger but much more controversial Hugos?
Yeah, let me first say congratulations on your win. They're beautiful awards. They look great on your mantle. I saw the picture on Facebook. Congratulations. Well deserved. We should preface this for people by, answering the question, what the heck are the Hugos?
Yeah. And even before that, let's make clear. Now, for those that don't know, James and I both kind of share similar views on these sorts of things. And I was looking for somebody that was sort of a sad puppy or rabid puppy to come on and give kind of that point of view. And nobody really wanted to step forward and do it. So, certainly I am going to, James, I think you can probably give a pretty good argument on the other side, but I'm going to do my best to represent at least the point of view. Now, I'm not going to be neutral or impartial at all. I do have divided feelings on the subject, but I'm going to try to be fair to both sides and give both sides views fair from my perspective. So now, what are the Hugo Awards, James?
The Hugo Awards, They have a more official title. It's a Science Fiction Achievement Awards, but they're called the Hugos. It's basically a large rocket ship on a wooden base, and each year's Worldcon does the base different. They're given out at the World Science Fiction Convention held somewhere every year in a city somewhere. This year it's in Washington State, I think.
Yes, Spokane.
In Spokane, Washington, at Sasquan. And they're voted on by the members of that year's World Science Fiction Convention. You pay for a membership. I think you can pay $40 for a voting membership, and you pay more if you want to actually go to the convention. They everybody nominates. Those are voted on, and then the final nominees are voted on, and they're given the awards out at the convention. And, you know, different categories, best novel, best novella, best novelette, best short story, best dramatic presentation, best theater, you know, best fanzine, that sort of thing, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. So this differentiates from the Nebulas, by the way. As James was saying, the Hugos are given out by the membership of the Worldcon, but that changes every year. Every Worldcon is different, so every Hugo voting base is different.
Right.
And that's important, right? That's going to matter very much when we're about to get into the controversy. But by contrast, the other famous science fiction awards are the Nebulas, and they are more of a closed set, and so they are never going to have the same thing happen that happened with the Hugos. The Nebulas are given out by the members of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, or SFWA, and that's sort of like the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. So the Nebulas are kind of like the Academy Awards. The Hugos are more like the People's Choice Awards if the people had to pay $40 or more for the right to vote for them.
Right.
And now see, here's the thing. Over the years, only a fairly small number, just a few thousand, would either go to the convention or join remotely or pay the $40 fee to be a contributing member but not actually go and still get to nominate and vote. But this year, something happened sort of different. And I've got to think, before I go further, James, I've got to think that if nothing else, and whether they have broken the awards or not, quote unquote, if nothing else, it seems to me that they must have made a lot more money than they made in the past, right? Because seemingly a lot more people joined this year to nominate, right? And so you got to think, if nothing else, their bank account's a little fuller. Doesn't that make sense?
I didn't think about that. I think that's possible. I think a lot of people, you know, would want to pile on just to either see what happens or to see if they could sway the vote. There might be a big influx of people who otherwise wouldn't vote who are now interested in voting for whatever reason.
And even nominating, you had to pay the $40 up front to even nominate. And so what I'm saying is, because these other writers and other publishers for the first time got nominated, they must have gotten more nominating votes than the people that usually get nominated, which means that more money must have already been spent to outspend and outvote or outnominate the, you know, the Tors and the Daw and whatever usually kind of get nominated. So, well, all right. So that's what the Hugos are. Okay. And what that means, because the public can vote on them, is that it sort of comes down to the honor system of the public, that everybody will play fair and you will nominate and vote as an individual. But that didn't really happen this year. Is it, you know, well, so do you want to now kind of tell the folks what happened differently this year and who was kind of behind it?
Really sure how they did it, to be honest with you. I mean, even I don't understand some of these, the arcane rules that the World Science Fiction Society has and with these things. But basically, it was a group of people, most notably, trying to think, Theodore Beale, who blogs under the name Vox Day.
Yeah, Vox Day.
Yeah, guys like Brad Bergerson and Larry Correa, who were very conservative guys, they got together and said, hey, wait a minute. You know, we write more kind of pulpy action adventure science fiction. Why is that never represented as opposed to the more literary stuff that gets nominated? But they even took it a step further than that and said, you know, there's a liberal bias to Hugo's, and these other stories that are nominated are by women or liberals and, you know, or people of color, and we don't like that. That's only a small part of it. You know, if that's coming more from the Vox Day sort of camp. I think what Correa and Torgerson are saying, I mean, it kind of has some merit to it as far as the kind of more action adventure stuff versus the stuff that would be in the New Yorker if it didn't have a rocket ship or an alien in it.
Yeah.
you know what I mean? So, so they're those, you know, Torgerson and Correa are kind of the sad puppies. Vox Day represents what they call the rabid puppies. Mm-hmm. And then they in turn call everyone else, SJWs, which stands for Social Justice Warriors.
Yeah, and there's another term like chorf that they also
– Chorf. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I'm cliquish, holier-than-thou, obnoxious, reactionary fanatics.
Wow. Okay.
That kind of shows you where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Well, I think you made a good point there is some justification to it. Let me kind of aim to throw out sort of that side of it. There has been a trend in recent years, I think, toward less of the old-fashioned sort of hero, you know, shoot 'em up, the stuff that people think of, the stuff that's getting made into movies largely nowadays, and more toward in terms of getting nominated and winning the Hugos, and more what I've always called sort of the sociological science fiction. And
right.
I've made a point for years of pointing out that there's very rarely anything in the Hugo nominations in terms of books and short stories and novellas and novelettes. There's very little in there that I ever read, that I have read or will read, because, you know, I prefer as a pulp writer, and I've fully embraced that now in my career as a pulp writer, I'm interested in action adventure, with that other stuff being kind of maybe nice background or informing things, but not being the main point. Whereas it's gotten to where the sort of touchy feely, you know, trying to explore themes like homosexuality, which is fine, but when that's the entire point of the story, you kind of like, well, you know, but what about the fun? You know, what about the adventure that science fiction is supposed to provide? So homosexuality or transsexual issues, transgender issues, you know, stuff that liberals are very rightly concerned about and that want to sort of promote to the public debate, which is absolutely right. But the issue that these other people take, the sad and rabid puppies take, is that that dominates, that that's the only thing, that if you're not doing that, you have no hope of ever even being nominated. So there is some, I think, there is some truth that far, that much. But then they go further, and this is where they start to lose me a little bit. Because look, if all they were trying to do was encourage the Hugo nominating base to be a little more inclusive and not just be stuff that comes out of Tor, you know, for example, and maybe throw a few Bayans in there every now and then, because they really do the voting base as it has been constituted up until now has sort of acted like only stuff that comes from Tor and other highbrow science fiction publishers is worthy. And anything that comes from Bayan or DAW or publishers that are more action adventure and less, you know, exploring sociological issues is just not good enough and beneath their notice. I get that resentment. I really do. But see, here's where I think they go off the rails a little bit. They look at the sad puppies, the rabid puppies, they look at that situation and they go further. They say that they are anti-authoritarian because they say that the people who have been nominating and voting for the Hugos and the people at places like Tor are authoritarian, that they are, this is the science fiction version in awards and all of saying that liberals are the real authoritarians and that people on the right want liberty and freedom. And I have serious, serious issues with that claim. We don't just hear that in this controversy. We hear that in lots of places. More about that later. They say that the people who have nominated and voted and won are elitist. Well, maybe to some degree there is some truth in that. I'm not going to be the one to pass that judgment, though, but I get where they're coming from. Now, you said social justice warrior, SJW. Absolutely. They claim that the people that have been nominating and voting. Hello?
Yeah, you cut out on me a little bit.
Okay, we're having a little bit of connection problem, but hopefully we'll be all right. Yeah, you said social justice warrior, SJW. Those are the people that the more on the right, the conservative side, the sad puppy, the rabbit puppy, they see as not being just concerned about diversity and everything, but going out and sort of sticking it in other people's faces and fighting a war basically over having their way. I understand again where they're coming from on that, but I think they carry. I think that the sad puppy right-sided crowd carries that way too far. Lastly, I think they go completely off the rails when they say that not having nominees from the more right-wing publishers and right-wing authors and libertarian publishing authors equals censorship. That's insane. Okay, censorship means that an authority over you is deciding what people can and cannot see and read. Nobody is censoring. The last I saw, Bayon was doing perfectly great, right? They're pumping books out every month, and people are reading them by the ton. You cannot, in the same breath, claim that your stuff ought to be nominated and be winning because lots and lots of people read it, and then turn around and say you're being censored.
Right.
That's a contradiction in terms. Your thoughts so far. Do you agree with what I just said, or how would you critique that?
Yeah, and I think it's I think it's endemic of the paranoia of those people on the right. I mean, look what they've done to the Hugos. They've skewed it completely in the other direction, and padded the nominee list with quote unquote their people, whether or not those people's stories have merit or not. You know, just to prove a point. And I think their point they're proving is that, you know, they're going and looking and saying, see, look, Hugos are broken, and we're all going, but you're the ones who broke them. You know, so I think it's endemic of the paranoia. And I think, you know, we're seeing this in larger society. I think what's going on in science fiction fandom is the same pushback that we're seeing in larger society as you know, gay rights are becoming an issue, and you know, gay marriage has become legal in 34 states or something like that. These guys are panicking. These guys are freaking out that the world has changed without their express written permission.
Okay, I think that's a good point. Let's look at how the actual nominating works, because this is again where I think that both sides are partially right and both sides are partially wrong. The way that it works to nominate is you just pay $40, join the Worldcon for that year, and I guess the next year maybe, and you send in your nominations, and later when the ballot's out, you send in your vote. And so for the sad puppies and rabid puppies to say that they are being censored, you're not being censored. You just haven't had as many people taking the trouble to join the Worldcon and nominate you, right? I mean, if censorship means you're not being allowed to be on the ballot. You're not being allowed to be voted for. If more people are voting for Tor's books than are voting for yours, that's not on Tor, and it's not on the Hugos. It's on your readers. Your readers need to get off their butts and nominate your stuff. Now, that's what happened this year. The right-wing authors, the libertarian authors, their readers, their fans, did finally get off their butts and nominate their, you know, put in their nominations, and it resulted, as you said, James, in their side getting almost all the nominations, almost. Right. But here's the thing. What that means is that just more of them showed up to nominate this year than the other side. Now, here's the objection that the left side has about that. They say it's not that, and I want to make this very clear. I want everybody to understand exactly the process and how it went wrong or didn't go wrong, okay? What happened this year was not just that randomly a bunch of fans of military science fiction and Bayon and Larry Correa and Torgerson and all of them just decided to get off their butts and actually nominate their favorites. No. What happened instead was that Torgerson and Korea and Vox Day actually have been promoting themselves and writers like them for months and trying to actually encourage people to vote or to nominate for a slate of potential nominees that they approved of. And so that is what the left side takes issue with. The left side, I don't think, is as angry that other people for a change got nominated. What they object to is the way that it happened, which is an organized campaign. Now you might say, well, the answer is that next year the left writers should just put their own slate together and have an organized campaign and try to swamp the right side ones, the libertarians. But see, once that happens, it turns into basically Republicans versus Democrats for the Hugos, with each side having a party and having their own set of nominees going in trying to win. And that is what people on the left mean when they say that the libertarians and the right, the sad puppies, have broken the awards. By breaking the awards, they mean that the only way that the slate candidates on the right can be overcome in the future is by the left writers and fans doing the same thing and falling into the same trap. And if they don't, they will perpetually be swamped by the puppies. Okay, so again, I'm laying these things out. How do you see what I just said? Does that make sense to you, and is that kind of how you understand it?
Yeah, that's kind of how I understand it. And you know, I was listening to a podcast about this just yesterday. But yeah, I was listening to a podcast the other day and talking about the slate thing. I think the Hugos will become broken when both sides start presenting slates of people.
Yeah.
I think it will push out otherwise deserving authors. I think it will hurt some authors who just happen to be a favorite of the sad puppies or even the social justice warriors, and they get squeezed out because of guilt by association. We have to think about what do we mean by slate. Mention somebody's name that he has enough pull that it gets on there, gets on the ballot. Same thing with Larry Correa or Vox Day. You know, where does it end at that point? I think the Hugos will be irredeemably broken if we have to start doing that, or if they have to start doing that. I also think that, you know, this has happened before. I've heard stories about Orson Scott Card calling up everybody in the SFWA and bugging the crap out of them to nominate Ender's Game. This happened in 87 with one of L. Ron Hubbard's books. Scientologists wanted his Mission Earth book, one of his Mission Earth books to win an award. When this first happened, a blogger had commented that, you know, the Hugos have always been political, but now they're only political.
Yeah, man. Yeah, this is such a difficult issue to unravel, because I mean, there's the whole level of politics and ideology on both sides. And I honestly think that both sides really are sincere. I think that both sides think they know what they're talking about. I think that both sides are sincere in addressing issues that they think need to be addressed by this. Of course, the problem is that neither side sees the other side's point of view or sees it the way that side sees it. So, you know, what you end up with is and I'm just going to go the left and the right for shorthand to make this simple and not have to keep renaming the puppies and all that. I keep wanting to kind of pare this down to the bare minimum to make it as understandable for our listeners that don't know a lot about this already as possible. I think that on the left, they are trying to go with the idea that the best stories, the best writers should win. And they feel like what the right side is doing here is sort of hijacking and force feeding their crowd and their material in at the expense of everybody else. On the other hand, I think what the right side thinks is that they have been they have been wrongly excluded sort of on purpose due to the political agenda of the people who have been nominating and voting in the past. And so they are doing what they can to mobilize people who agree with them to overcome that roadblock. But again, I think both sides start to lose me when they start getting extreme with it. When the left side people start accusing the right side people in mass, right, ad hominem, of being racists and homophobes and reactionaries and all that, I think that's wrong. But when the people on the right start accusing the ones on the left of censorship and authoritarianism and all that, I mean, I think that's equally wrong. I think everybody on both sides needs to kind of take a breath and take a step back and focus on the actual issue here rather than bringing all this other crap that originally got stirred up by Gamergate in the video game industry into this.
Right.
So, I mean, do you agree with that, or do you think there's more to it that I'm kind of oversimplifying?
Well, I think to a person, you know, some of them are really that racist and that homophobic and that misogynistic. All you have to do is just read one of Vox Day's blog posts. But you know, he's getting lumped in with these other guys. I think what it was originally about was just the, you know, the style of the storytelling, you know, pulp versus literary, and now it's turned into this, big, you know, political, mashup that's, you know, a microcosm of what we're seeing out in the larger society. I think that the Hugo Awards, the way they're set up, are rife for this kind of conflict and vote rigging anyway, because it's such a small group that nominates and votes. I mean, you're talking about maybe 2,000 people. That's out of the 7,000 or 8,000 that usually attend Worldcon, another small group. Yeah, it's almost impossible to read everything, all the nominees. So I think what a lot of people do is just, you know, I know this guy's name and this guy's name, and I had fun hanging out with him at the bar at last year's Worldcon. He's a nice guy. I'll nominate his story. Versus people that actually get the packet and read everything that's out there.
Right, right. I think that one objection I've heard that really kind of annoys me is when the again, I'm going to use my just left and right here. I know it's a drastic simplification, but just for brevity's sake, when the people on the left say what they're trying to do with the Hugos is not what the Hugos are, and why don't they go and start like a People's Choice Award or a conservative science fiction award or something like that? And my response to that is, well, if more of their people nominate and vote than yours do, that's not on them. I mean, I just keep coming back to this idea that it seems like there's a sort of a sense of proprietorship, of ownership, as though the people on the left side of this feel like they own it because they've always owned it. And the reason they've always owned it is simply because they've been the ones getting off their butts and nominating and voting. And if people who disagree with them and have other tastes, politics aside, right? I mean,
right.
What if, you know, if there's 2,000 liberals who are social justice warriors or whatever you want to call them, if there's 2,000 of them that have been doing all the nominating and all the voting for the last 20 years, and let's say that there's 4,000 people out there who think that My Little Pony is cooler than any other science fiction fantasy thing, okay? Well, if 4,000 people nominate and vote for My Little Pony, then I say, My Little Pony, here's your Hugo. Why? Because people that thought your stuff was really cool outvoted the others. That is not on My Little Pony. It's not on the My Little Pony fans. You know who it's on? It's on the voters on the other side who didn't bother to nominate or vote. If they wanted to have more nominations and more votes, they should have gotten up, paid their $40, and voted. I cannot for the life of me understand how either side can complain about a systemic problem when it's a majority vote.
Right.
If you don't like the results, vote. You know, vote. But again, the slate thing is a different thing. I understand objections to the slates because the slates is making an organized effort to focus on one person and it takes the individual vote a little bit out of it. I do understand that. And I understand I may have ticked some people off by saying, you know, go out and vote if the other side's using slates. I get that. So my solution, I guess, is more people vote, but don't have these slates. I mean, and again, as people have pointed out, it's not against the rules. It's just sort of against the spirit, or at least it's against the traditions. So,
right. Well, and another problem with slates too is it gets back to, you know, you're using considerations for nominating a story or TV show or book or whatever. You're using considerations other than quality, and that's the only metric that should matter here.
That's an excellent point. Let's bring in quality for a second, because absolutely, I mean, that's one of the arguments that people on the left make, right? Those on the right will say, well, Kevin J. Anderson's written a million books and they've sold millions of copies and he's written all these different properties, and therefore how come, you know, and therefore they say the conclusion is that the Hugos were already rigged toward the left because Kevin J. Anderson wasn't getting nominated. Excuse me.
But he did get his first nomination this year.
And he was on the slate. Right.
Right.
And so the people on the left say, well, you know, that's because he's not good enough. That gets back to your point of quality. They'll say it's not that Hugo nominators and voters said, ooh, I don't like the politics of that guy, so let's don't nominate his great book. The people on the left say they looked at his book and said, this is, you know, okay, it's mediocre, but it's not as good as these five here. Right. So we are therefore asked to believe, and I'm not saying that this is necessarily right or wrong. I'm just saying this is what we are asked to believe. We are asked to believe that by and large, the science fiction and fantasy being written by the more left side of the community is of better quality than the science fiction fantasy being written by the right side of the community. Again, I'm not saying yes or no either way there. I know which one I'd prefer to read, which puts me in with the puppies, sadly. It's just it's kind of like during Marvel Civil War when I totally agree with Captain America, but I still liked Iron Man better, right? Same thing here. So I'm more philosophically inclined to be with the left on this, but I enjoy the stuff the right puts out a lot more. That's why I'm kind of torn. But let me put that question to you. Do you honestly think that the writers and the material they've been producing on the left side of the science fiction fantasy community is simply of a better quality order than the right? Is that a legitimate argument?
You know, it's difficult for me to answer. I think we can answer it collectively when we vote for stuff like this, but it's so subjective, right?
Yeah.
And I like both things. I write the one, you know, the stuff like we do with, you know, I write about robots punching each other in the face.
Yeah.
But I also like a good Ray Bradbury story every once in a while. Harlan Ellison. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've read some of these, you know, Hugo stories, and I like them very much. There's no way I think I could write one, so I just figured, well, no, I'll never win a Hugo. I don't campaign for their ruination, saying they're keeping me out. I just need to put my stuff out there and write better stories. This whole thing just makes me want to just chuckle and keep indie publishing. Because
Amen.
The whole thing's gotten so silly on the face of it. but you know, I don't know. I mean, I think there are very good stories. I have read a story that I just said, you know, how did this ever win a Hugo? It's complete garbage. I might not have been moved by it or something, but I can still appreciate the craftsmanship, the artistry, the language that went into it. So, I mean, yeah, it's like I said, it's so subjective. How did Ready Player One not get at least nominated in 2012?
Yeah. Well, that's
everybody and their brother was talking about and reading that book.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely should have. Yeah. So, no, I think where we are now then is that, I mean, we kind of see both sides. I mean, yeah, you're exactly right. I identify as a pulp writer, and I've never been more happy to do that than this year when the science fiction and fantasy writers are imploding. I mean, I said in my acceptance speech in Chicago for the novel award, I said that I was as excited to win that as if I had been handed a Hugo or Nebula. And I mean, there's a part of me that says, well, but come on, if you were handed a Hugo or Nebula, you'd probably just fall over dead with excitement. But on the other hand, the way things are going now, I honestly do think I'm happier to win a new pulp award than a Hugo or Nebula simply because I know that I'm writing what the community likes, and the community is rewarding me for doing that with that award. And I don't know if you can say that about the Hugos now.
I kind of feel the same way about that. I feel more a part of this community than that community. It's gotten so large. It's impossible to see and read everything. Mm-hmm. And my tastes have changed since indie publishing has come out, since I've started writing new pulp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading different things than I would have, you know, say 10 years ago. I'm more excited about the dramatic presentation Hugo nominees, almost anything else on this list.
Yeah, and I'm going to go down the list here in just a second. We can talk about it a little bit. But I'm going to tell you, I can't remember the last time I read a Tor book. I know I've probably got a handful of them somewhere downstairs in my bookcase.
Right.
But that kind of stuff just has not ever really appealed to me. When I was a kid, and you were probably the same way, when I was a kid, I was reading all the Del Rey paperbacks that were coming out, the Larry Niven and, you know, stuff like that. And then as I got older, I mean, you know, my taste changed. But still, I wasn't going and looking for the latest the things that have been winning the last few years. It just never appealed to me. And you know, when I read science fiction these days, honestly, a lot of it is the Warhammer 40,000, the Horus Heresy stuff from the Black Library, who, as I've mentioned here before, the fifth largest science fiction fantasy publishers in the world now. They never get nominated for anything like this. And I think for two reasons. One, because they are more of this sort of right wing, it's sort of military stuff. It's, you know, big manly men and all. It's not getting deep into the feelings of non-big tough warrior men, you know, and that's what the other stuff is kind of more is better at. And then they're also they are sort of seen as tie-in media. And I want to get your feelings on that for a second. Is it right that if you write anything that's considered media tie-in, like a Star Wars novel for Lucasfilm or a Star Trek novel for Paramount, if you write anything that ties into an existing property and is not your own, it is sort of immediately considered lesser quality, lesser prestige, and never gets nominated. How do you see that phenomenon?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. First of all, I mean, it has this kind of... It's kind of, you know, blacklisted as soon as it comes out of the gate just for having, you know, the word Star Wars or Star Trek on it or a game. You know, if I think what I've always thought, a good book, a good story, a good comic book, a good TV show, whatever it is, should get nominated and win if it's really the best one out there.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are awards for tie-in fiction, awards for everything else in science fiction. Maybe there should be. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It gets this kind of a bad rap. I think writers like to write them, I think they have a lot of fun doing so, and I think it shows on the page. You know, Peter David,
yes,
writes incredible Star Trek novels, or he used to. I don't know if he still does or not. Some of those are my favorite ever.
Yes.
Of any tie-in fiction, stuff like Vendetta and Metamorphosis and Q and Law, and I can still remember them. I probably still have a few around here somewhere.
Those are just good science fiction, regardless of whether they're set in somebody else's universe or not. They're just well written, fun books.
Exactly. And I don't think I don't think anybody should be excluded.
I'm going to step in here because James's connection got really bad, but what he said here was absolutely the work should stand on its own regardless of politics.
I think that, for example, Keith DeCandido deserves to get nominated for a Hugo at some point. And the fact that he hasn't is not because he's not a great writer. It's because he generally works where the money is to make a living, right? Which is in the properties that are going to pay him.
Right. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's something sort of blue collar about that that I like.
Yeah.
Guys, you know, writing for rent money. You know, in the pulps, we do that. We've learned from the old pulp guys. They write for a penny a word, you know, so they get the rent that much.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that today's – I mean, we consider ourselves new pulp writers, but we're not like, you know, we are a different breed because we're using things like print-on-demand and ebook and all that to directly reach our audience. And that is pulp-like in the sense that we're going to the least expensive medium to reach our readers. But in another way, like you just said, the old idea of the blue-collar guy who does this for a living, because not many of us new pulp people do this for a living. It's our side thing, right?
Right.
But these media tie-in writers, they have the other side of the old pulp writer lifestyle, which is that they are doing it for a living, and they are having to crank this stuff out to pay the rent. And so I think that, like you said, I think that we of the new pulp movement, we're kind of half of the old pulp movement. But those media tie-in guys like Peter David and Keith DeCandido and the ones before them and since then, they really are the other half of the old pulp world because they are making a living doing what pays. But that doesn't make it less quality.
Right. And I'm happy for Kevin J. Anderson's nomination this year. You know, sure. He's another big tie-in writer. This isn't a tie-in book, but he does do tie-in fiction.
Yeah. And here's the funny thing about that. For all that he was on the slate of the Sad Puppies, that book that he was finally nominated for is a tour book.
Right.
So that's one defense that the Sad Puppies have made is that they are the ones being inclusive. They're not excluding. They're excluding the things they think are not worthy, but they make the argument that they're being inclusive because they included on their slate women and writers who write for tour. Now, I got to say, I haven't mentioned this yet, but I do have to say, one of the controversies, and this is going to lead to a lot of the voters voting no award, which means they just blanket, they want no award given, is that John C. Wright, and honestly, I'd never heard of John C. Wright before this all came up, but from what I understand, he's been around a long time, and he's never been nominated, but he's pretty far out on the fringe right. He was nominated for no less than three of the five best novella spots. He got three of the five slots for best novella. And by the way, a fourth one was my friend Tom Kratman, who's a very right wing. You know, I was on a panel at Dragon Con one time with John Ringo and Tom Kratman, and Ringo set me on the left. He sat in the middle and said, Kratman has to get way out here on the right side of the table. From him, from Ringo, okay? If that tells you anything, right? So
exactly.
So you've got John C. Wright, and Tom Kratman, four of the five nominees. And he wrote for Castalia House, which is Vox Day's publishing company. So you can kind of see how it does seem to be a kind of a what's the word I'm looking for? Something going on there on the up, not on the up and up. And then I've got it. And let me add one more thing about John C. Wright. I immediately went and Googled John C. Wright and went to his blog. And oh my goodness, this raises the last point I want to make with you, unless you have any other points you want to throw in here. But let me throw this one at you too, because this is the last controversy of it that I want to throw out there from my perspective. And that is John C. Wright's stuff that he writes on his blog is repulsive. It's horrifying to me. I'm not going to go into, I'll let any of you that want to go Google it and check out his blog, but he's very, very, very socially conservative, shall we say. Okay. that's not libertarian. Libertarian is do what you want as an individual and don't bother anybody else. Nobody bothers you. So libertarians aren't against, for this, for example, same-sex marriage. Libertarians are like, if you want to marry whatever or whoever, marry whoever, that's your business, not mine. Libertarians say the government should not stop you from doing what you as an individual want. And I totally get that about libertarians and appreciate it about them. This is just hard right conservative socially. And so here's the question that raises, and it's another point that's been batted back and forth. Should the social views publicly promulgated by the writer, should that enter into the consideration of their work, either as you a reader deciding whether or not to buy it, or as you as a nominator deciding whether or not to put it forward as a nominee? What do you think?
Gosh, you know, that's a tough question. I think it's a little subjective. I think if somebody, you know, reads a Theodore Beale, aka Vox Dei story, and he's basically fictionalized one of his vile, racist blog posts, creating a story about how he thinks the world should be, I think that's going to impact the quality of that story in the minds of someone who disagrees with that.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, I guess it would become political. Otherwise, no. I think if it's a good story, if you know they enjoyed reading it, if there's no really no overt politics in it, they should judge it on the story's merits. I think what's going to happen here with the slates, though, is that John C. Wright and whoever else is just going to get no award and no consideration for the story at all. They should at least read the story first. I don't know if these guys are on here for quality sake or if they really wrote the best story in somebody's mind or if they're just on their proof point about the left dominating the Hugos.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you should look at the story's merits. I've read plenty of stories, and at the end of it, I couldn't tell you one way or the other the politics of the person who wrote it.
Right.
And I actually prefer it that way.
Right. Yeah, I think that I'll be honest and admit that I'm not a huge fan of Orson Scott Card as a person and his personal views, which he's made very clear. And so when Ender's Game came out as a movie, I didn't go see it in the theater simply because whether I was interested or not, I didn't want to give him my money.
Right.
But I did watch it, on Netflix or something when it wasn't a direct correlation of me watching it to him getting money, or on whatever television or DVD or something where it wouldn't, give him the money for me to be watching it. And I judged it on its own merits, whether I liked it or not, and never thought for a second about his politics or his social views. So I think you can separate the two, but I think you also, if you feel strongly about it, there are ways to judge something on its merits, but still not support financially what that person's lifestyle or that person's views, So,
right.
Yeah. I think it's up to each individual reader and consumer to decide about something like that, I guess.
Exactly.
Well, let's wrap up because we're almost out of time. I want to run through the best dramatic presentation long and short form, because those are the ones that are fun that you and I can really kind of dig into. So let's real quickly choose our winners, okay? Here is best dramatic presentation short form. These are the nominees. Doctor Who Listen, and I think that's an episode I haven't seen yet. There are four left that Maddie and I haven't had a chance to watch. So Doctor Who Listen, the pilot episode of The Flash, I haven't seen that yet. Game of Thrones, The Mountain and the Viper. Oh, I definitely saw that. Grimm, Once We Were Gods. I haven't watched that show at all. And Orphan Black, By Means Which Have Never Yet Been Tried. I'm only on the first season of Orphan Black now, so I haven't seen that either. So of the five nominees there, I'm the only one I really am qualified to vote for is Game of Thrones, but I think it's worthy. So I'm going to say Game of Thrones. Which one of those five would you throw your vote for?
I think I'll have to stick with TV 2 and say the pilot of The Flash.
Okay.
I can't remember what the Listen episode And I know that's a Capaldi episode, and
right.
So far he's just not grabbing me. He's not my favorite doctor.
Yeah.
You know, it's the quality hasn't been there for me. So definitely the Flash for me.
Okay. And then lastly, the best dramatic long form, which is basically theatrical movies. The nominees are Captain America: Winter Soldier, Edge of Tomorrow, which was basically Live, Die, Repeat is what it should have been called. More people would have gone and seen it if they just called it what was on the poster, Live, Die, Repeat. That was a Tom Cruise movie where he kept getting killed.
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy, Interstellar, and the Lego Movie to kind of redress it not getting nominated for the Oscar, I guess. So. Winter Soldier, Edge of Tomorrow, Guardians of the Galaxy, Interstellar, and Lego Movie. This time you go first, and then I'll go.
Well, I'll have to think I'm going to have to go with Guardians of the Galaxy. Loved that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that three of these are totally worthy. Captain America: Winter Soldier was amazing, and I'm very excited that Anthony and Joe Russo have been signed now to direct the last two Avengers movies after Ultron. That is awesome.
Yes.
Because if the Thanos movies that they're going to do are anything like Winter Soldier, we're in for a treat.
Yeah, Winter Soldier was amazing.
Yes.
It's my favorite of the two Captain America films.
Interstellar, I got where they were trying to kind of do with it, but it was just to me a muddled mess, and I did not enjoy it very much. The Lego Movie, I did not enjoy at all. I've actually seen all five of these. The Lego Movie, I did not enjoy much at all. I know I'm the only person that says that, but I didn't like the Lego Movie. I found it boring. So for me, it's down to Winter Soldier, Edge of Tomorrow, and Guardians. I told you I loved Winter Soldier. Edge of Tomorrow, I thought, was a very good science fiction movie. And if the criteria is simply science fiction movie as opposed to comic book superhero movie, then I think Edge of Tomorrow should win. But yeah, I loved Guardians of the Galaxy so much, and it's definitely science fiction-y, outer space, galactic, you know, goings on. It was my favorite movie of the year, and just barely edging out those other two, I got to go Guardians of the Galaxy. So we agree.
Yes.
Aha.
Great minds collide.
That's right. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up things for this week. James, I really appreciate you being on. Oh, I got to tell folks as far as my stuff. I got you to tell yours at the beginning. So, yeah, always go to www.whiterocketbooks.com. My most recent work out there now is the novella Cold Lightning, which is in the Shattering Universe. It's a very fast-paced, short, little fun story. It's available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And it's available as a limited edition hardcover for like $20, about 100 pages of exciting action adventure. And
I just finished it. It's awesome.
Oh, you just read Cold Lightning?
Yeah.
Oh, you liked it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I just finished it up the other day. I need to give you an Amazon review. I haven't had a chance to do that yet.
Well, A, thank you so much for reading it, and B, I'm really glad you liked it, and C, if you do give me an Amazon review, I'll be delighted. So I really appreciate that. So there you go, folks, a testimonial. all right, and I'm currently working on a prequel to the Lucian novel, so hopefully in about 6 months or so, that'll be done and out. We'll see. I've been talking to Mark Williams, and hopefully he'll be brought on to do the art for it for the cover, so we'll see. All right. So, James, thank you so much. Any last thoughts before we wrap this topic up? I don't know that we've come to any real conclusions, but at least we've kind of thrown all the sides out there and dug through it.
Yeah, I don't think there is a real easy way to get a handle on this. I think anybody that's interested can Google it and see blogs, and people have had on this before and blogged and written about it endlessly.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's no easy answers, no easy solutions here. I think they should open up the voting pool as wide as they possibly can to keep something like this from happening in the future. And we'll just have to see how it goes. By the time you and I are at DragonCon, this will all be overdone with as far as the, you know, seeing who wins. Hopefully it won't happen again, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I think the only real mystery left at this point for this year is how many of the categories will get no award versus how many will get one of these that the left side kind of objects to. So that's going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out. And also, you know, how much this year's awards are valued or people talk badly about them and consider them not really legitimate, which would really be a shame, a real blow for the Hugos too. Meanwhile, the Nebulas are sitting back going, ha ha, we rule.
Exactly.
The closed system triumphs over the open system.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks a bunch, James. The Rocket's going to get on out of here for another week. We appreciate you folks for listening, and we will actually be back next week. John Ringer is going to join me again. We're going to get into part 7 of our 6-part James Bond series because we came up with another James Bond topic to talk about. I know that's been a popular series. It's done a lot. It's done really well in downloads. So we'll see that next time. So thanks a bunch. Our time is up. We thank you for yours, and we'll see you down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.